Hello, and welcome to the High Level Showdown.
Special election series.
That's right, leading up to the 43rd federal election, we're going to break down the issues that matter to you.
Let's go.
Hello, and welcome to the first of what we hope to be six issues-based podcasts here on the High Level Showdown. Tonight, we're talking all about the environment. And to help me with this discussion, I've got my two co-hosts. First, the host of everyone's favorite foodie podcast, The Calzone Zone, with Michael Vecchio.
Oh
Michael,
my God. How's it going?
I'm very well. Thanks. Thank you, Ali. Yes, it's a very tasty podcast. It's for food connoisseurs.
That's of course. And you know, the show wouldn't, well, it just wouldn't be the High Level Showdown with the host of the Triple P, Sharon Vendura. Sharon, how is the Punching the Patriarchy podcast?
What is this weird bit you're doing?
But Elliot, why don't you tell them too? Though I mean, Elliot also has a his own, you know, new podcast, and it's exploring the dark history of Malta, that secretive Mediterranean island nation, and it's called Heart of Darkness. So it's very interesting, Elliot.
Yes, for people that are just so lighthearted, it's quite a dark history that we have in our past. Yes. But anyway, let's leave the topics of our other podcast to another show and get into the conversation about environment. Sharon, I guess let's start with you. So before we get into the differences and similarities between the four parties on the environment, how important do you think this issue is to Canadians? And how do you think it's played out thus far on the during this election campaign?
Yeah, great question, Elliot. I honestly think it's so interesting how things ebb and flow. Usually on an election, of course, economy and things like that are some of the top issues, maybe housing, childcare, and not that these aren't important, but I think for the first time that I can remember, climate change and the environment is, I would say, one of the top three issues in an election. I think it's somehow contributed to a lot of course, millennials being able to vote and being really involved in this election process. But I think not only millennials, just people in general are really thinking hard about what it means to actually be environmentally friendly, what that means for Canada, what it means for them as an individual. And I think more than ever, people are really looking for whoever is going to take the next government, who's going to lead the next government, to really be, I think, leaders in this and make some change. And I think up to this point, there has been, of course, a clear, I think, not a consensus, but a clear example, very much straddling party lines. And so people see conservatives as ones that aren't really, you know, progressive and action oriented when it comes to climate change. Of course, you have the Green Party, which, you know, everything they are is centered around climate change. So very much focused on that. But I think as of right now, especially with the Trans Mountain pipeline and the oil and gas industry really continuing to have a sluggish restart here in our country, more than ever, people are really questioning things. And of course, the carbon tax, which is has become one of the most commonly used phrases and terms in Canadian lexicon, not only in politics, but just in everyday life, has really brought climate change and the environment to the front of people's minds.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think the last point that you touched on there, the carbon tax, is probably where we should start, because it is sort of the defining line between the different parties in this election. Whether you support a carbon tax or not, or if you want to increase it or decrease it, those are all questions. So, Michael, why don't we start with you? The Liberals introduced the carbon tax. Can you give us a rundown on what they've done thus far and what they're promising to do in the future with regards to the carbon tax?
Right. So amongst their, you know, again, let's reiterate, these are promises if elected, and we'll see what actually happens if any of these, when these parties do form government. But Liberals are saying they're going to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions 30% below the 2005 levels, according to the Paris Agreement. Of course, the famous Paris Agreement of 2015, which, you know, the Liberal government had just been elected under Trudeau. That was actually one of his very first international appearances was at the Paris Agreement. So they want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 70 megatons away from the 2005 levels. And they're setting a minimum carbon price of $20 per ton this year. And they would increase to $10 a year to $50 by 2022, and imposing a carbon tax on businesses and individuals in provinces with no federally approved carbon price plan. So, of course, in Alberta, we did have that under the previous NDP provincial government, and that was quickly scrapped. I believe that was Bill 1 of the UCP government scrapping that. So you can see that there's the potential for a clash between the feds and the provinces. They're going to impose a carbon price plan if the provinces don't have it. And there's also the carbon tax on heavy emitters. They want to clean the fuel standards and the Trans Mountain Pipeline. So it's an ambitious policy platform of ideas. And they've already been working towards this the last 4 years.
Yeah, I think this has become sort of the dividing issue on it. And I like that you've tried to encompass some of their other policies as well in that too. Sharon, let's go to the left and talk about the NDP's response to this, because I guess the main takeaway that I, at least from the NDP, is that the Liberals aren't doing enough and they don't plan to do enough, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think basically what I think the NDP and a lot of people who are more on the left in terms of climate policy really see the Liberals as being contradictory. When you say you're for the environment, you're wanting to meet these Paris agreements, and then you buy a pipeline, that's kind of contradictory to a lot of people. So a lot of people are confused, and the NDP really are kind of going really bold. Not as bold as the Green Party, of course, because their plan is like on steroids, but the NDP want to be even more ambitious about reducing emissions. So they want to continue carbon pricing, making it more expensive for industries and wealthy people. So that is a big focus on them. So cracking down on those heavy emitters, who I think Jagmeet Singh says bear the brunt of the burden. They also want to reduce emissions by 38% below the levels by 2030. So this is almost, I think, tripling, is it? 38, no. So just a little slight increase than the Liberals. And what's funny about the NDP plan is, even though they're like, yes, we are really progressive, we're pushing for this, what their plan doesn't do is really talk about the costs of some of the specifics. So one of the ideas that the NDP has is that they want to retrofit buildings that in Canada to be more climate friendly. And so older buildings, houses, things like that, to have clean technology, you know, use more renewable energy. And they are going to encourage, I think, new builds to be more environmentally friendly. Now, that's pretty expensive when you think about retrofitting all the buildings in Canada. They say they'd spend about $15 billion on this, but the cost of actually what that would cost is, I mean, no one knows. It's pretty wild. And then, of course, you know, the standards of banning single-use plastics and things like that. So although the NDP have a plan, it's really unclear where they're going to get the money for, and logistically what it would even look like to be able to retrofit every home and building in Canada.
And do you think, I guess I'm going to ask Sharon, do you think that they can make promises like that because really in their heart of hearts they know that they're not going to form the government? So they can afford to make such announcements because they know they won't be held accountable for it. I mean, they won't form government, so those promises won't be enacted, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's why the plan is so weak. It's very similar to, and I know we'll get to it, is the Green Party's, even though they have a very ambitious goal, one of the things very similar to retrofitting homes is the Green Party says they want all new cars sold in Canada to be zero emission by 2030. and all traditional cars to be replaced by 2040 to all be zero emission. So by 2040, the Green Party is saying we want no cars that are driving on the road to be, they want them all to be zero emission. Like, you know, it's, of course, it's, you know, sounds good and it's very ambitious, but both of these parties, I think, there is that expectation that we probably aren't going to get elected, so we can go with these really bold plans that don't really have a cost attached to it and aren't really realistic.
I mean, I think I see the Green Party plan as sort of, and I'm a bit loath to talk about the Green Party in this episode, because I think that the impact, government impact on environment is sort of displayed throughout their platform, not just in their specific promises regarding the environment. But what you see here, I think, is that Elizabeth May and the Greens talking about not only meeting Paris climate change targets, but vastly exceeding them, and also working towards completely re-establishing our market and our economy and the way in which we act. And I don't think that there's any more telling promise than that, you know, calling for the end of all traditional cars sold to be sold in Canada by 2030. I guess, so we've gone from good to better to best in terms of, and
but what is realistic, I guess, you know,
but I think,
I think also
is around,
we're all so many things. Okay. I was going to say what you reminded me of when you were talking there, Elliot, when you're talking about their really bold vision, even though, of course, it is really bold and it's very, very aggressive. Like I said, it's like everyone's plan, but on steroids. A lot of people, and I think the experts on climate change.
By the way, Sharon, eco-friendly steroids, right?
Yeah, eco-friendly steroids, exactly. Not any Monsanto shit. But I think really what the experts are saying, and it's really timely that we're having this conversation because there's the global climate change summit right now going on, which is making the news. And the UN is releasing their new, or they just released this week, their new climate report. And basically, you know, what we're hearing from the experts is that not only are the global temperatures rising at an insane rate. So this year between 2019 and like 2015 was the warmest ever of any equivalent period on record in human history. But temperatures are rising so much, you know, the ice caps are melting, different things like that, that actually what they're saying is that the Paris Climate Agreement isn't enough. So countries actually need to triple their climate emission cut targets, the report warns, for us to actually make a real kick at solving this problem, or at least slowing it down. I mean, we saw a year where there's massive floods and tsunamis in places where you don't see that. Southern Africa, where I'm from, like Botswana, Uganda, there were so many countries that were hit so hard with, you know, natural disasters that we don't see. We see, you know, hurricane season being so much devastating. Also, reduced supplies of drinking water. You have a drinking water crisis in South Africa.
Heat waves. Yeah,
heat waves. I mean, Europe was insanely hot this year. Devastated fish stocks. So even though I think a lot of times it's really hard to grasp because it seems so far away, what we're hearing is that it's not that far away. It's in our generation. Like, we will still be alive probably when we see even the worst, some of the worst impacts of climate change.
I mean, I guess if we're turning this, you know, back to our current election here in Canada, because this is obviously a global issue and there's a number of countries struggling with this, I guess there's a common thread being woven through narratives around particularly the carbon tax, in that it just doesn't do enough, whether that's, people saying we need to go more, the Greens saying, you know, have these very ambitious long-term targets, or, you know, even the NDP pushing for, you know, a cap on emissions that goes further than the Paris Climate Change Conference settings. I guess the other side of that argument has been one that's been pushed by conservatives, in that the carbon tax isn't good enough so why are we even looking at it? And Michael, can you talk about what the Conservatives' plan on the environment looks like?
Right. Well, of course, the number one thing, as Jason Kenney did here in Alberta, the first piece of legislation would repeal all carbon tax, would kill the notion of any carbon tax, will repeal the clean air tax. And of course, they will give tax incentives, however, and for those businesses that are investing and committing to technology that will, you know, lead to lower emissions and cleaner air. One of them is a 2-year retrofit program, and that's so households can get incentives to retrofit their homes and their buildings, you know, inserting solar panels and that kind of thing. And they also want to put a cap on large emissions, and will make, you know, the big polluters pay if they go over a certain amount. I believe here it's 40 kilotons per year. So they're going to reward those who cooperate in terms of lowering their carbon footprint, but certainly not a carbon tax.
It's interesting because those are all market-based solutions in terms of encouraging people to retrofit their homes themselves. Maybe that generates business for companies that do that. Maybe
so it's interesting. So rather than like taxing people, we're going to reward people for good behavior. You know,
that's sort of my thought is that isn't there something that's inherently it doesn't make sense in that, you know, we're going to create market-based solutions, but the best market-based solution, a price on carbon, is not a way in which we're going to go. Sharon, I'll turn it to you. Am I just being cynical? Is this just the Conservatives don't believe in taxes and doesn't matter if it's a market-based solution or an idea that originally came from the previous Conservative Prime Minister, Stephen Harper?
Well, I think that the problem with a lot of these plans is that, of course, the carbon tax isn't the only way that we're going to solve the climate crisis, but also tax incentives and investment in technology to lower emissions also isn't the plan. What I think that both the Liberal and the Conservative plans are missing is actually a comprehensive approach to actually solve these problems. And I will say about the Conservative plan, most experts who have reviewed kind of what they have on the table, even though it's, you know, not very robust, say that the Conservatives probably won't meet any targets based on their plan. Actually, emissions will probably go up under the Conservatives, because when you make an only incentive based, you know, what are the incentives actually going to look like? If you're not aggressively trying to reduce our emissions and having, you know, I think a more holistic approach, you're not going to get anywhere.
You know, and I'd like to add that the Harper government notoriously received the mock Fossil of the Year award at least two times, you know, by environmental groups who were criticizing the government's inaction on these things, you know, and including the muzzling of scientists and their research. So, you know, you would think that a conservative government under Andrew Scheer would continue under the same vein as Stephen Harper. And, you know, I remember very clearly in 2008, when Stefan Dion was leader of the Liberal Party, you know, that was, you know, he also first proposed a carbon tax. And Harper was very staunchly against that. So they've always had it out for that carbon tax.
I guess one of the things that is really important to note here is that when you go from the political spectrum, the Conservatives all the way straight through to the Green Party, there is a wide range in terms of, one, I think the severity with which the parties are taking this issue, and two, their position and the way in which they want to address it and what that says about it. I guess I think that comes from a narrative that's emerged probably in the last 2 years, but I think it's existed for a lot longer than that and manifested itself in different ways, in that you're either pro business and pro the economy or you're pro environment, and there's no forth, right? It's either if you're in for one, then you're out for the other, and vice versa. Michael or Sharon, you know, maybe Sharon, I'll start with you. Is there anyone that's proposing some sort of transition plan or some ideas around how we can, particularly for a place like where we live in Alberta, how we can transition away from what is the mainstay of our economy?
Well, I know the Green Party does have some things in their platform that really talk about not only a just transition, although their plan is a lot more on like cutting emissions and things like that. But one of the big things in the Green Party's plan is also setting up a bipartisan. It's funny, we're in Alberta, and so we have like kind of a war room here against people who are against the oil industry. What Elizabeth May is proposing is to set up a bipartisan war cabinet to tackle climate change. And so what she really wants to do is bring together people from across the party lines to really think about how we can not only cut emissions, but also really think about how are we going to end fossil fuel reliance? How are we going to, you know, maybe look towards stopping fracking and imports of foreign oil and different things like that. And so I do think the Greens, even though they have a very aggressive plan, I think have more of a, and I think we would expect it, more of a, you know, I think I've said the word a couple of times, with a holistic approach to solving this problem.
Michael, this is a very polarizing issue. Is there anything that you see out of these four major parties in terms of a promise or policy that really catches your eye that you think is something unique?
Well, certainly, I think, you know, since the Liberals and the Greens are they both have used 2030 as sort of a benchmark, and you know, it seems like it's far away, but really, I mean, quite honestly, it's the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So what is unique to me, I guess, is the urgency of these of their calls to action. This is not something, even 2040, which is obviously a little bit further down the line, but still within the next 20 years. What is unique is that, you know, these are not promises for down the road. These are promises that are really going to happen right now, you know. And of course, another thing the Liberals said, that they're going to stop, quote, inefficient fossil fuel subsidies by 2025. That's 6 years from now. You know, they're going to ban single-use plastics as early as 2021. That's 2 years from now. So I guess what strikes me is how soon they plan to enact these things. But really, and it has to be soon. You know, we can't wait any longer.
You know, the last election I can really remember the environment being at the forefront to the extent that it is in this election, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe you guys disagree with me and say it's more or less, was the Dion election, where we had constant conversations around the, you know, the carbon footprint of every mm-hmm. campaign and what the future was going to look like, whether it was cap and trade.
Well, you know, that was Elliot. You know, when I was a teenager at the time in 2008, and that was the first time that I had really heard about a carbon tax. So Dion kind of really brought that to the mainstream, a federal party. That was the first time a federal party had suggested such a thing.
Well, Michael, you know, there's a first for everything, and this is where I'll have to correct you. Actually, Dion ran in 2016. It was 2018, Ignatieff was the leader of the Liberal Party back then. But, you know, I'll let you get back.
Wait. No, Elliot. Stéphane Dion ran the 2008 election and lost. Harper won a minority in 2008. And then Dion resigned. And then Ignatieff became leader.
Well, I will agree to disagree.
It's factual. It's factual. Dion ran the 2008 campaign and lost. Remember, Dion is not a leader.
Oh, they had that
oh yes, hat. Right. Yes, yes, you're
settle
right.
Settle this on Twitter.
You're quite right.
While you guys were arguing about that, I kind of did a quick Google search and really searched all the parties. And the idea of the question that you asked, Elliot, around kind of a just transition, basically. So transitioning workers to, you know, of course, work in the oil and gas industry and things like that. And the Liberals and the Conservatives don't really have anything mapped out here. But really, the NDP and the Green Party are the only ones who actually have a specific plan laid out, which includes retraining and apprenticeship programs, you know, cleanups of orphaned oil wells, which of course would use a lot of the people who are skilled in this, things like that. I think they have kind of very solid frameworks for transitioning people who are working in the oil and gas sector into maybe different jobs in tech and green energy and things like that. So that is interesting to note that neither the Liberals, from my quick glance, so, you know, I might be wrong, have any kind of wording around that.
It does speak to what, something that we've sort of noticed here while going through this, that there is sort of a divide between parties that want to, that are creating policies to meet Paris or some version of it, and that the Liberals and the Conservatives, and then, you know, obviously very different from the NDP and the Greens that are talking about more like wholesale change to the way in which our economy operates. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that is a fair assessment. And I think it's just, and I think I was listening to another podcast. It was a CBC podcast that really talked about this in a very succinct way. I think, of course, a lot of things are very values-based, but climate is one of those tricky ones where I think it really challenges what people believe and their values in the world, not only about the present, but also the future. And so it's really hard to pin down when you were talking about, you know, being pro-business and pro-economy, and then people being like, but I want to save the earth, and what can our actions do? You know, it's a really tough thing, I think, for individual people to grapple with, because I think most Canadians believe, I think, that, yeah, there is a climate problem and we need to do some change, but it's hard for them to see who's the party that's going to do that while supporting some of the other things that they agree with.
Michael, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
I was going to say, I think also at the end of the day, even, you know, regardless if you're a conservative or a diehard Green member, it's really just a difference of opinion in terms of action. But nobody wants to see Armageddon. Nobody wants to see the earth fall apart. Even the even conservatives who are staunchly against the carbon tax. I mean, of course, they don't want to see planet Earth die. It's become a political disagreement over how to deal with things, but nobody wants, you know, I don't think it's fair to categorize, you know, conservatives as anti-climate in the sense they're not. Come on, they live here too. They're human beings. We are made of carbon, right? So,
and maybe that's the biggest problem with this is that how politicized the carbon tax has become. You know, the rhetoric of Jason Kenney and that dude in Saskatchewan and Ford in Ontario.
Scott Moe,
of really politicizing something that I think is so important and literally that our livelihoods and our future depends on is, you know, really putting this along party lines and, you know, demonizing the carbon tax when really they should be saying maybe the carbon tax isn't the only way or the right way, but this is what we're going to do. The problem is from the conservatives, we haven't really seen a solid fact-based and really realistic approach at actually meeting some of those goals that we need to have when it comes to the environment.
Can I take that cleave a little bit further? Because I think it's an interesting thought. And Sharon, taking it the other way, does the value of this issue, the environment, climate change, does it matter to you more or less based on your age because of the risk that it has on your life? Is that too divisive of a thing to say?
I think that's a big assumption to make.
So what you're saying, Elliot, the older crowd doesn't have to care because they will die sooner.
It's a very cynical view, but is that not something, you know, conservative voters are typically older. Liberal voters are, you know, except for the last one, which the millennial vote really swung to the Liberals, are typically middle-aged to older, but, you know, have a different sort of ideology. NDP supporters and Green supporters typically of a younger generation. Is that why? I'm wondering if that has something to do with this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think experts would probably say there's something that has to do with that. Wow, what was that sentence? You guys know what I meant. You know, when you see people like that young girl, Greta, you know, really being a climate change advocate and things like that. So I think maybe, but also I don't know. I mean, I think even locally in Edmonton, from people who I know who are really involved in climate justice, said one of the most surprising things in the past year is how many older people and seniors were coming to different events and information mm-hmm. sessions. So while I think very traditionally, of course, we would associate being environmentally friendly with younger people, I do think that it might be unfair to, you know, draw wide blanket on older folks saying that they don't care because they're going to die. But probably if you did a poll, you might see, you know, younger people leaning more towards being more environmentally, you know, activists.
I think there's a truth to that, you know, that yeah. there's a segment that is obviously older and is going to go first. But I think it's just it's a cultural thing. You know, it is now we now have more public awareness about the need for to combat climate change, and as Jaren said, we're even seeing older people who are coming to that awareness. So it's just a shift in tone, you know.
Yeah. All right, guys. My last question here. We're coming up right against you know, time for us to go. Michael, on a scale of 1 to 5, how 5 being the most top of mind, 1 being the least top of mind, the average voter going into the voter booth, where are they going to rank environment?
I think it. Honestly, it depends. I mean, just a general. It depends on where you live.
Is 1 being most important?
1 being least important, 5 being most important.
I really think that, honestly, Elliot, it depends on the region that you live in. I think the Atlantic and BC, it's going to be more prominent. Obviously, in the prairies, maybe not so much. But on average, I would say maybe a 3.
Jaren, what about you? What do you think?
I was going to say a 3 as well. Top of my head, I would say 3. Which I think if you looked at the last election, that wouldn't have been the case.
No.
It's a sign of the times.
For sure. Guys, thanks so much for doing this. This is our first of the Issues podcast. We'll be back with another one of these in about a week or so. Thanks so much.